The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host, guest, Random Reptoid, or Chupacabra may not necessarily reflect those of AM 950 Radio, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Now, it's time to step into the unknown. There are things people experience but never talk about. A shadow moving in the corner, flickering of the lights, a disembodied voice. We invite you to talk with us, share your story, share your experience, because this isn't just your story, this is our story. This is Ghostbox Radio with Greg Bakken.
And this is Ghostbox Radio on AM 950, where every night we talk about the paranormal, ufology, Bigfoot, and so much more. My name is Greg Bakken. Thank you very much for joining us on this wonderful Monday morning. And okay, I have to ask the question. I'll ask my guest in a second as well. Did you all see the damn eclipse? Because I pretty much have had enough of hearing about it for the day. And not so much the eclipse itself, but if you've seen any of my social media platforms today, the word that I'm getting really sick and tired of hearing is totality. I have had enough of hearing the word totality. I've never heard. Here's the thing. I am somebody who is, I think I live under a rock, and people have been telling me that's the word that they've been hearing alongside the eclipse their whole entire life. I have never heard that until this eclipse was coming through. So I'm just like sitting here, like, okay, whatever. And I think my mistake was I was watching the Weather Channel, which I love to watch in general because I love weather. I love all that stuff. But they used it so much. And I kind of had enough of it. So that's my gripe for the moment. And the only thing that's going to get me out of this funky mood is talking about Bigfoot, and I am extremely excited. I'm so excited, actually, when Chester Moore had agreed to come on my program. It's been a while since we talked about it, so I've been very fortunate that he agreed to do so. Chester has worked as a wildlife journalist since he was 19 years old. He is editor-in-chief of Texas Fish and Game, host of More Outdoors Radio on News Talk AM 560 KLVI, host of Higher Calling podcast, and author of 15 books on fishing, hunting, and wildlife. He has contributed to Sports Afield, Deer and Deer Hunting, Tide, In Fisherman, Ducks Unlimited, Delta Waterfowl, Gulf Coast Fishermen, Hunter's Horn, Game Trails, Animals and Men, The Bonefish and Tarpon, Trust Journal, and many more that has appeared on numerous wildlife television programs, including National Geographic's When Sharks Attack. He has won more than 200 awards for writing, photography, radio, and conservation. He is host of Higher Calling Wildlife and Dark Outdoors podcasts. He hosts the HigherCalling.net and GulfGreatWhites.com blogs. He and his wife, Lisa, are the founders of the Kingdom Zoo Wildlife Center and its Wild Wishes and Higher Calling Wildlife programs. Chester, welcome to Ghostbox Radio.
I'm glad to be with you, man. It's an appropriate time of night for a show called Ghostbox Radio. So let's have some fun.
That's kind of the point. You know, the one thing that we don't even put in that we, your bio, you haven't put in there is one of the things that we're going to be talking about tonight. And that's your newest book, Bigfoot South. And that is, I mean, and you know, that I suppose that's apropos because you had mentioned prior to it that, you know, as much as you are a part of that community, and you certainly are, mm-hmm. it doesn't overrun the overall work that you're doing.
No, and it's part of what I do. It's fun, but I'm in the outdoors business, the media business, and I write about things that pay the bills. And I also have just a bajillion interest in the great outdoors, and just the Bigfoot topic's one of them, and it's a fun one.
And, you know, we're going to get to Bigfoot here in a second, but, you know, you're very much so. You said that the bigger outdoors is such a big part of your life. Mm-hmm. What is it? Can you even pinpoint or have an idea of what is it that it just excites you so much?
You know, it's going out into God's creation and just seeing beauty and majesty. And, You know, you go out there and you're in the mountains and you see the snow-covered peaks and the Alps, and you look above the tree line, there's bighorn sheep or mountain goats, or you hear a sound in the distance, you know, and you're like, what is that out there? There's always something that compels you to go further. And for me, it's the encounter. It's being there in a beautiful or maybe even a spooky place like a swamp, like by my place here.
Sure.
And there's something beyond the tree line calling out. What is it? What lives out there? To me, it's like an eternal mystery. What's out there? And I just like to go out there and find out what's out there. So I just want to encounter the creation and the opportunity to see the things that I saw, like in Sports of Field magazine growing up, you know, looking at a bull elk or, you know, looking at a black bear or a grizzly or seeing a great white shark in the Pacific. Just seeing those images come to life in front of me is an eternally inspiring thing.
You know, I mean, first of all, I don't live directly around woods, but, you know, being up in Minnesota is, I'm sure, you know, it's a very beautiful state, a lot of stuff happening there. And, you know, I've never really articulated before what you just said in terms of there's like pockets, like you might look out there and you kind of wonder what's over there. What's in that pocket of land? Mm-hmm. What's happening there? And it's not even like, it's not even scary or anything. It's inviting. It's like, what is that all about? I love that.
Yeah. You know, like this swamp that runs behind me, a bayou system that's 400, 500 yards behind me here. You know, it's not like I'm going to run into something out there. It's an endangered species or super rare, but it might be an 11-foot long alligator. They're getting close to breeding season, or might be bald eagles that are starting to show up around here. I've never driven by a wooded lot, fished in a stream, been by a mountain where I didn't think for a few seconds, I wonder if there's a really big white-tailed buck. I wonder if there's a mountain lion up there. So that's always what compels me to go out there.
I think that's pretty incredible. And I don't mean to turn you into some sort of mystical individual, but do you think you're not Dr. Doolittle over here, but do you think you get along with all sorts of animals and stuff as well, being so kind of joined to the outdoors?
You know what? I hunt and fish. I kill my own dinner or catch my own dinner. I'm connected to nature and I love wildlife. I'm big into conservation, wisely using our resources, science-based management of resources. I just think that I understand nature pretty well. The parts that we don't understand, I have an inherent, I think, understanding of it. But I think the deeper part of it is just the appreciation. I get upset when I go by a place that's the last giant tract of woods in my area. It's 1,800 acres, just got plowed down for a refinery.
Yeah.
I understand commerce. I got to drive a gasoline car. But at the same time, I'm a little sad because this last piece of wildness where my house is gone. And so I always love wild things and wild places. And I'm happiest when I'm with my family and people I love in some wild, beautiful place.
And I also like the idea that if need be, you can take care of yourself.
Oh, yeah, man. If you listen to my Dark Outdoors podcast, you'll understand why I'm a big proponent of the Second Amendment, taking care of myself. Dangers in the outdoors, you know?
Right. Absolutely. And you know, the idea of sustainability of, you know, when people say, oh, I hunt, a lot of people, I think, go in the wrong direction at first, sure, being like, oh my gosh, you know, you're killing. It's like, no, there's reasons why you need to do this. And sure, also that someone like you is going to be know how to do it properly and know how, what that means for the whole ecosystem.
Yeah. We've all got blood on our hands when it comes to wildlife, because even if you're a vegan and they plow that field for your box of cereal, they killed the ground squirrels that were there too. So I just try to look at nature as like, let's do what we can to keep it going. For things like elk that are behind me here on the wall, or something mysterious like this whole Bigfoot and this Bigfoot South thing. Like, I would hate for all these places to be gone before we solve that mystery.
But don't you think if they're all gone, it'd be harder for Bigfoot to hide and it's easier for them to find, right?
I think if we get to that level, everything will be gone. You know what I mean?
So let's talk about that a little bit about Bigfoot South. You know, and I think to myself, there's certain areas of the country that I really want to talk about sightings of Bigfoot and whatnot, Minnesota, but also down in Texas. You know, I mean, this is like, these are like perfect areas. Down South is a perfect area. What, you know, you wrote this book that just came out, Bigfoot South, and you can get the book on bigfootsouth.com.
Yep.
Right.
Right now, you can go to BigfootSouth.com, order it, and get a free Bigfoot South decal as well. And it's like you said, it's the Bigfoot phenomenon investigated basically below the Mason-Dixon line, and including here on the Western Tier in Texas and Oklahoma and Arkansas and Louisiana and all the areas, the Arklatex where I am, into Florida. And I try to cover every state a little bit. There's a whole lot of Lone Star State in it. I'll say that much.
Yeah. Now, when you're younger, getting in, when you're a child getting into this, and I'm assuming family brought you in to the lifestyle that you are now part of. How soon did it take for you to suddenly be interested in the idea of Bigfoot?
Really early. I mean, I'm 50, so I grew up in the early, I was born in 73. So like I was 7 years old in 1980. So that 7 year span, there was an unbelievable amount of stuff on TV about Bigfoot. You had Marty and Sid, the Croft brothers, Wild Man, Boy and Bigfoot. You had, you know, the $6 million man when Andre the Giant was playing Bigfoot. Yep. And then my dad had a copy of the Argosy magazine, which was like a men's adventure magazine with the Patterson-Gimlin pictures in it. Yeah. And I saw that, and then I end up seeing The Legend of Boggy Creek getting on early cable, getting wheeled to the Texas Children's Hospital for surgery. And those things made me really interested in the topic, and particularly Legend of Boggy Creek, because I was a smart little kid and I went, man, they talk about Bigfoot like being in California and British Columbia, but hold on a second. If you look at this map, Arkansas is right here. Right. South Arkansas is on that, almost on like the Texas, Louisiana, you know, line on both states. And that's like right by me. So that really got me interested. And that was all the media. And just knowing that that there's mysteries that we haven't solved yet. And why wouldn't there be? I mean, it made sense that why would everybody be lying about this? You know,
when you were younger and you figured that there was this mystery about Bigfoot and eventually other cryptids, do you feel like we have made any distance on learning more about these creatures, or do you feel like it's been relatively stagnant? Like, do you think we should be further along?
That's a great question. We probably should be further along, and we may be way further along than we know in terms of official information on this. But there are people that have done great work. I go back to forefathers, journalistically, John Green. If you ever read Sasquatch, the Apes Among Us, the greatest Bigfoot book ever written or probably ever will be written. He didn't have the net to search, though. There wasn't a database for the BFRO or GC Bureau. He interviewed folks at their house. And then you had John Green launched into guys like, you know, who read his stuff. You like Grover Krantz, who was a scientist. And now you have Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum. And you have my friend, Dr. John Bendernagel, who passed away. So they've made some strides, especially in the area like footprints and all that kind of stuff. I think there has been a lot of strides made. But the bottom line is, until science admits or there is a specimen someone can view, this will probably won't be satisfied in terms of scientific curiosity. Now, if you ask researchers like myself, do we know a few things about these critters? We would probably say yeah. But it's still up to debate because there's been no official scientific recognition of them.
No, it's really interesting to see how it, you know, how it goes, and the fact that we don't seem to be able to find this. But there, I mean, I also get frustrated with people who have logical ideas, and it's air quotes for those on the radio, logical ideas why you can't find these Bigfoot, because they don't understand animal life cycle, say, as you do, for example, and that there is a big difference there.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. So in Bigfoot South, I do a thing where I break down something Grover Krantz wrote years ago. Grover Krantz, who was, you know, he was a professor in anthropology, and he figured that in the Pacific Northwest of British Columbia down to Washington, Oregon, California, there would probably be about one every 25,000 acres. He based that on some bear numbers and things, and said if there were any more, there would probably be quite a bit more sighting activity. Any less, it'd be hard to have sustainable population. So I took that and transposed that into the whole country and gave an idea about numbers. And you look at numbers of states, you might go, my God, that's a lot. Well, I forget what Texas's is in my book because it's been a while since I actually wrote it, but it's in the thousands, a couple of thousand maybe or whatever it was. And here's the crazy part about that. We have 6 million whitetails in Texas. And yet a hunter can go on a stand in an area that has a deer for every 20 acres and never see one an entire season. So another thing is people ask about bodies. Why not finding a body? These are obviously, if they're real, and I believe they are, primates. Primates are long-lived animals. Chimpanzees in the 60s, you know? So if you have a long-lived animal with a low population density, the chance of finding a carcass in the woods is nil. And the other part is different levels of decomposition after animal preying on them and things like that. Most people, believe it or not, are not walking around the woods looking at a smelly old decomposing carcass and going, I could solve a great scientific mystery. They walk past it and they're done. They don't think about it. So unless maybe they saw the feet or the head, the skull, probably wouldn't trigger anything to most people. You know?
No, absolutely not. Why don't we go ahead and do this? Let's take our first break.
Yep.
When we come back, we're going to really delve into the book Bigfoot South. We're also going to talk about a sighting of sorts that Chester had when he was much younger. A lot to get through, plus your questions. You're listening to Ghost Box Radio on AM 950. And as a reminder to everybody, this Wednesday, April 10th, we're going to have live readings with psychic medium Refined Divine. That will be for people to call in as well as put their questions in the comments. Once again, that is coming up this Wednesday. Tonight, we are talking with author Chester Moore. We're talking about his new book, Bigfoot South. We really haven't been talking about your new book, though, Chester. We need to get into that right now because I know that there's a lot of people who would like to know what is going on with that book. A lot of Bigfoot fans out there. What's the book about? We talked very little about it.
It's a journalistic investigation of the Bigfoot phenomenon in the southern United States. And it solely talks about that region, the region that I live in, spend a lot of time in. And it goes into a few pieces of some of the really famous cases, but it mainly is stuff no one's ever talked about in the media. My goal was to go into places that weren't covered so much and talk about some amazing things that I have uncovered. And, you know, as a journalist, I'm all into patterns. You know, if I start seeing a pattern, I'm like, oh, there's a story here, some kind of story. And on the cover of the book is you'll see a little sign and it's a car and there's this ghosted in gray looking Bigfoot head. And that's kind of the thing that turned me into really investigating this in terms of for a book. It was because there's a stretch of highway in southern Newton County. It's about 25 miles north of me here and in Texas and the Louisiana line. And I had someone report to me, this would have been 23, 24 years ago, of seeing a gray colored Bigfoot cross in front of this particular road sign that said Nichols Creek. Well, that was very interesting, especially since they said it was gray. They were adamant this was a gray, like a Spanish moss colored gray animal. Sure. Well, like a year later, I get another report from someone, this is pre-social media, someone seeing a gray-colored Bigfoot cross in front of the Nichols Creek sign. And they didn't even know the other person. And I'm like, holy smokes. So the hunting lease I was on, my aunt owned the property in the middle of it, and they leased the rest to hunters, and we were on it. And she said, she kind of thought we were nuts about the Bigfoot thing. Sure. And we're only like 7 or 8 miles from this sign. And she told me one day, she said, I don't know about any Bigfoots, but a guy saw a silver bear down by where you're hunting. I said, a silver bear? And she said, yeah, she had no idea about these stories either. Actually, she told me this right before I heard the first one. And she said, yeah, he was out shining on the one light for rabbits on the high line down by where you were. And he sees a silver bear squatted down, and we shined the light on it. It stood up on two legs and looked at him and walked on two legs across the highline. And I'm like, A, silver bears don't exist except for some whitish silver ones in BC on the river. And they ain't going to run across a highline on two legs, especially not that one. It's about 50 yards wide. So then I had one of the few negative interactions I've ever had with a quote unquote professional in my business. I walk into a writer's event and this guy says, hey, Chester, we found some Bigfoot tracks out behind the hotel if you want to go cast them. And I wasn't a follower of Christ like I am now. So I gave him some Stone Cold Steve Austin sign language, literally in his face, just like Stone Cold would have done, and walked off. And this guy freaked out, man. He followed me into the elevator. And he's like all apologetic. And I'm just kind of seething. I'm like, okay, whatever. And he's like, I don't know about Bigfoot, but I saw this weird thing in Newton County, Texas. And I'm like, oh. I said, well, speak, you know. And, yeah. he ends up walking all the way to my room with me. He didn't go in my room. He walked, and he's telling me this story. He said, this guy lived in Dallas, which is 5 hours north. He said, we left at midnight for my buddy's deer lease to get there about 5:30 in the morning at the camp and opening day. And I look up and there's a sign that says Nichols Creek. And he goes, I'm going past the sign and I'm kind of leaning on the window like this because I've been sleeping. And I look up and there's this about 5.5 foot, 6 foot tall, gray colored thing standing on the white line about to cross the road. We had to slow down. It had a face that looked a little bit monkeyish, but there's no hair on it and kind of longer hair on the top. Mm-hmm. And then we passed it and I could see in the mirror that it ran behind the car. And this is the funny part. I said, okay, Mr. Skeptic, since you thought that the Bigfoot thing's mockable, what did a genius like you think it was? He goes, I thought it might have been some kind of weird wolf or something. I said, so we got bipedal gray werewolves. That's not funny, but Bigfoot's mockable. But that was three stories in front of the same sign. Didn't know each other, never publicized, never put on a forum, never put on social media. And right before I published this book, those all happened 20 years ago plus.
Yeah.
A lady reached out to me, told me where she lived, which was in that same general 10 square mile block of woods.
Mm-hmm.
So that was interesting. She had some activities. I was out of town and I kept getting these Facebook messages and I couldn't check them. When I went to go finally look at this, I think somebody's messaging about Bigfoot. At the very end, she said, is it possible there are gray ones out there? So I called her and her uncle in 1996, about 5 miles as a crow flies on another road that joins this area, saw a gray colored Bigfoot cross the road. So that's the kind of stuff that gets me interested because number one, people never think they're gray. People who had no, they weren't trying to get publicity and they had a similar pattern all in one area. So those are the kind of things that really got me into wanting to put a book on. So there's a lot of stuff like that in the book, you know, where you talk about these unique, you know, that someone would have to be a very ornate fakery for that, you know?
Do you want to hear something interesting?
Yeah.
I've seen a gray one.
Really?
Yeah. In West Point, Kentucky.
In Kentucky.
Yeah.
Very cool. Was it a larger one or like a smaller one?
Nope. It had been pretty large. I mean, we were probably mm-hmm. about 50 yards away at least. It came out in clearing and it was a full moon that night. So it came out in the trees. Yeah. And mm-hmm. so, you know, the thing that will always stay with me is the long gray hair, but it was like, you know, almost like highlighted by the moon.
Light. Yeah. You know, that makes sense with the light right there.
Yeah.
And this guy, the one who mentioned the one that was like right by him looking at it 5-6 feet away in the car mentioned that it was, you know, the car lights, he saw it, but when he passed, it looked like it was. Those hair, he really like highlighted the hair a little bit longer coming down like here, you know? So, mm-hmm. And so that's interesting stuff. And so when people talk about that or maybe seeing a juvenile or something different, that really makes me interested because it's easy now for someone to give a report. They've already seen Finding Bigfoot. They've already read every book, every blog, yep. every post. They'll tell you everything. Well, I heard wood knocks. I found this. I saw blah, blah, blah. I found a tree. You know, pointer going in this direction of formation, these people were just saying what they saw. And to me, that's interesting.
I get your point with that, actually, because it's and I was talking with somebody about this, not necessarily the Bigfoot, but something along those lines just yesterday, that there's a period of time where we are kind of naive about certain things. And sure. I feel like that works in our favor back there, you know, back when in the 70s, when you're seeing Andre the Giant playing Bigfoot and stuff, we don't have, and not that we have the answers now, but we could be in a construct of having these norms that we seem to follow for these certain beliefs. And back then it's completely new to us.
Well, I think what happens is that people, the biggest ally Bigfoot has in terms of staying mysterious is mockery. People not wanting to get mocked for seeing it. So I think when people have something they think's fantastic like that happened to them, They want to prove to you that they're telling you this story, so they get every bit of data that matches Bigfoot they could possibly out of that scene. Well, I've read this and saw this, and I think that was there to try to prove it, when I would rather just hear what did you see that day? What did you hear that day? Absolutely. And then let me pick the information out of you instead of you setting it up for me. You know, I think that's, let me just deduce it from you, because I'm not going to, you know, I'll never ask, did you find a limb formation? I'll just be, did you see anything unusual or notice anything about where you were at? Was there anything in the habitat you were at that you noticed, you know, or whatever? So that's kind of part of my style of like interviewing people and things like that, because and I think.
I was going to say, it makes a lot of sense because of your background and stuff. And yeah. I think that's something that is needed more. I mean, not disparaging anybody out there, because sure. We get excited about what people have to say, but you do have to take kind of a low key approach as well, just to kind of get to where you need to go. We're talking with author Chester Moore. We're talking about his newest book, Bigfoot South. You can get the book over at bigfootsouth.com.
Autographed.
Autographed. Yeah. And then you also said, what else did you get that you could
get? A decal. You get a cool Bigfoot. I'm a decal fanatic. My whole laptop here is covered with decals. Bigfoot South decal. And I'll sign it to you, personalize. You want to put a note in there for you. And I'm really excited to have the book out and tell some. There's even a few spooky stories in there, which is always a lot of fun.
So we're going to go over to the comments here real fast and banter with Richie B. He says, what's your concept on tree structures?
So I just mentioned that because, you know, when I first got into this, I never remembered reading much about that in early Bigfoot works. Worked with some Southern researchers, you know, Jim Lansdale, Bobby Hamilton, and different guys early on, Craig Woolheater, and they would mention a few of these things. And I will tell you this, I have seen some really strange looking like pointers, like where it looked like a tree, a young pine tree was pulled up and put a certain direction in the fork of a tree. And then you go another 100 yards, there'd be another one to point in the same direction. So I don't know what they are. I have never seen one. I don't know anyone who's seen one being made. But my opinion is this, I'm less likely to believe the ones photographed now because there's an entire generation of people who could put that in there and make that up. It's really easy to do. But I think there's something linked to this phenomenon. And the only thing I can say I've found as a pattern on that it seems to be related to travel, trails.
Sure.
Because where I've found tracks before, and they're always on a really obscure, you like have a main game trail, but you'll have a little trail where there's no hard hoofed animals moving on it, but the grass is pressed down. You know, little impressions. And I found some things pointing in that direction numerous times. So I've kind of thought if they are related to the phenomenon, it's linked to travel. That's kind of my thoughts on that.
Now, when you mentioned that, you know, that it's easier for them to make it now. Are you talking about the fact, like, if you're not seeing it, are you talking about being replicated, like from the picture side of it, like augmented?
Yeah. I mean, like someone could come, that's easy to fake. So if someone were putting pictures out there, because here's the thing, we got these devices and we got social media accounts. We got people trying to make a living as Bigfoot researchers, and you can't, you know, they got to find stuff all the time. So it's easy to go fake that, you know, they could just go put a tree here. No one knows. You know, so when I wasn't hearing about this on every show 20 years ago, it was more easy to believe and photograph that. Now that's a piece of evidence I got to go, maybe, you know, not disparaging anyone in particular, but those don't impress me so much, honestly. It's been interesting. Like I said, if I think it's related to anything, it's travel corridors, perhaps.
Understood. Because I'm loading up a picture of one that we got on our investigation that we had talked about the place. I'll put it up here real fast.
Sure.
This is what we saw in one of the places. And I don't know. I mean, the people that we went with, I find them pretty credible. Sure. But I mean, I think it's a very interesting thing about, I mean, the one thing that I find interesting is like the curvature of trees, like just bending trees.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've seen similar type things. Probably the more interesting ones I've seen where I've seen trees that were like pulled up, smaller trees pulled up.
Mm-hmm.
And not chopped or cut, and stuck several of them in like a in the fork of a tree, you know, right, pointing a certain direction, you know, things like that. And there's weird stuff. I don't know anyone who's ever seen anyone doing this. So that's right, the hard part about it. You can kind of deduce that there's a footprint on the ground that's 15 inches long. It's either a Bigfoot track or a fake Bigfoot track. I don't know what that is, but my theory on what I've seen kind of seems more around travel corridors. So that's the best answer I got.
That's interesting. Yeah. I like that. It's so interesting to be able to kind of share thoughts and perspectives, sure, on this, because, yep, there is all sorts of, mm-hmm, different things to it. And to your point, until we are able to find, mm-hmm, some of that, you know, stuff that we can share with everybody at the same time,
yeah,
we're all kind of living in the same, you know, like a banter with Richie, for example. He says, I'm in Massachusetts. I've had a decade plus of interaction on my property. Took me a decade to even talk about it publicly, but, mm-hmm, I've documented it as I've gone along. I haven't seen it, but I am certainly never going to dismiss it. You know,
sure,
I mean,
sure, right, exactly. Yeah. And the thing is, keep on doing that, because if there is disclosure, the information that we have will be valuable once disclosure, if that ever happens scientifically. The citizen scientists can now contribute their anecdotal experience, evidence, and things like that. So keep on keeping on, man.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the exciting thing about it. You know, and it wasn't up until about a year ago I really dipped my toe into this world. I mean, I've been very curious about it. I've researched, yep, it, but actually being out there, mm-hmm, in the woods and stuff, and it's a different game. I mean, it really is something very different. And you being someone who has grown up out there, you're, mm-hmm, going to know stuff that I have no idea about, such as the sounds that, yeah, animals make out there. That's a huge one. I played something. Do you know who Robert Robinson is?
Uh-huh.
So I played him something once. You know, I thought, mm-hmm, you know, I saw on a site that's like screaming Bigfoot. And he's like, that's an eagle.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
Just go to, yeah, show how naive I can be.
There's one that's got a lot of views on YouTube. It's obviously a feral hog, you know? So,
yeah.
But there's stuff that's not. And actually what got me and proved to me this was real was a sound. It wasn't a sighting. It was a sound. And a very intense sound. But I did see something at a fair one time that was really intriguing. I want to talk about a little bit. See if anyone might have some info for us, because y'all are up in the land of the Minnesota Iceman. So maybe y'all heard of some of the stuff I'm going to talk about here in a minute.
Absolutely. Can we first fit in a quick break?
Yep. Absolutely. Let's do it.
Let's go ahead, fit in a quick break, because I want to make sure that we get Chester to be able to tell his story. Once again, folks, if you have questions, put it into the comments. Mm-hmm. The book is called Bigfoot South. You can get it at BigfootSouth.com. We're only starting. We're listening to Ghost Box Radio on AM 950. You know, if you have nothing better to do this weekend, even if you do have better things to do this weekend, come on out to Brainerd. It's going to be the Brainerd Psychic Paranormal Wellness Fair, and I'm going to be out there at the Arrowwood Lodge this weekend. It's going to be Saturday the 13th and Sunday the 14th, and I'm going to have a table there. I'm going to be talking about all sorts of great paranormal stuff. I'm also going to be speaking both Saturday and Sunday, and it's going to be a great conversation. There's also going to be people there to talk about cryptozoology. There's going to be healers, readers, all sorts of great things. I'm really looking forward to it. Once again, it's the Brainerd Psychic Paranormal Wellness Fair, and you can find out more about it. Go to metaparapro.com. for more information, and then join me tomorrow on Ghost Box Radio with Greg Bach, and we are going to have on the new metaphysical store in Anoka, Divine Lights. We're going to have Amanda and Amy on, and we're going to be talking about the store, about what's new over there, and just the fact that they're in Anoka, which, Chester, you don't know this, I'm sure, but Anoka is the Halloween capital of the world.
Cool.
It is actually a pretty cool place. We're going to be talking about that, but we have this great conversation going with author Chester Moore. We're talking about his book, Bigfoot South. Please go to BigfootSouth.com and you can get the book and have it signed, and you get your little sticker.
Decal, baby.
The decal, yeah. I got
one right here, as a matter of fact.
Let's see it.
Shameless self promoter. Look at that.
I like that.
pretty cool. Anyway,
that is really cool. And we didn't talk about the fact that the forward is written by Lyle Blackburn either.
Yeah, Lyle's a good friend of mine, and you know, Lyle and I have a lot in common, similar in age. He's in Ghoul Town in Solitude Eternus. I was in bands Freak 13 and Dokken. I mean, the open for Dokken and open for Exodus. So we were like underground guys that open shows, and yep, they're the headliners, you know. But we have a lot in common, and he's a great guy, a great author, and an incredible storyteller. And he's done something else for us. So my real heart is helping kids, you know, like we do wildlife encounters. My wife and I have an outreach. Our mission is to bring the love of Christ to hurting kids through wildlife encounters. We have a facility where we work with kids in terminal illness, trafficking victims, parental loss. And a lot of times we get asked to take those kids on Bigfoot expeditions. So the only Bigfoot research I do in the field is taking kids facing special challenges out to do it. And Lyle and my good friend Shelly Covington, Montana, did our first one of those, well, second one of those with us in Arkansas a few years ago. So there, he's also a quality human being. So
that's fantastic. That is great to know. I thank you for sharing that. That's really cool. And I can only imagine how much more special it makes it to bring them all out there and see them interact and be able to have their chance of trying to find this elusive creature.
We last group we brought was last September. We're going to start, I think we got another group coming up doing this. We do animal things every weekend pretty much, but the Bigfoot thing kind of comes periodically. And they did a whoop that sounded pretty convincing. And the whoop was responded to by a wood knock. And that wood knock was responded to by one on the other side of the clearing from us within about 5 seconds. And those kids about jumped out of their skin, but they left happy. And you know, if I'd have heard like one distant whoop that night for the kids, I'd have been happy, you know, because you can't make results up, you know. And so it was a lot of fun. So if you know of a kid facing special challenges, like I mentioned, you know, you can message me, go through BigfootSouth.com. You can message me, goes directly to me, and maybe we can find a way to give them some special Bigfoot stuff. And I got to mention this. I'm speaking at the Monster Festival coming here at the end of the month from my good friend Craig Woolheater. Also going to be speaking on August the 10th at Tennessee Wildman CryptidCon over there, my good friend in Tennessee with my buddy Randy Hutchings. But Craig Woolheater, who does the Felt Monster Festival as well as he does the Texas Bigfoot Conference, always allows us to bring our families in. So we'll bring a family each event. They get to come in free of charge and be part of that. So I'm also happy to partner with people in the Bigfoot community to help kids that need a boost.
So that is fantastic. Well done. Thank you. Thank you so much for doing that. That's amazing. And to all, to your support group and the people who help you with it, all of you, thank you. That's amazing.
Appreciate it, man. It's just, it's a joy of my heart doing that kind of stuff. And that's what it's really all about. And, you know, it's just a ton of fun. I'm working on a project now called Wild Man of the Woods. My good friend Paul Fazinski and his buddy Seth Geib are producing these incredible documentaries. They got one about Salt Fork up right now, and they got one from Amy Boo up, a research from Amy Boo up, and we just filmed one in Texas, and I'm the narrator and helping a little bit on writing Wild Man of the Woods. Check that out. A lot of fun, but, you know, when I was doing the Wild Man of the Woods commentary, I mean, the narration of the first one, I was wrapping up the Bigfoot South stuff, and it reminded me of something I've never forgotten about, but I never put it in the context of the book.
Sure.
That was this body I saw at the South Texas State Fair when I was a kid. I don't know why I didn't put in earlier works. I mean, I've got little notes written about it all over in my archives. But when I was and the reason I want to bring this up, it's the fun. But you guys are in the land of the Minnesota Iceman. So I have to mention this out there. Right?
Yeah.
It was 83 or 84. I don't remember. I've slept a little since then. It was one of those 2 years. Because I remember I was into heavy metal already at the time. That started in 83. So I was pumped because they had all these metal bands playing there at the fair. And they had a big, I mean, it was a large trailer. And it had, for then, pretty high-end graphics of like Patterson-Gimlin creature. Is this a real Bigfoot body? And you walk in, there's this like probably 6.5 to 7 foot long thing laying there. Mm-hmm. And I remember it being a male and being very anatomically correct.
Well endowed, huh?
It was.
I don't know where you're going with this, so I just
I just remember it being weird. I'm like, if they fake that, why did they spend so much time on it? But but I remember it looking different. And here's the And I talked to my mom about this because I drug her into this thing. I was like 10, like five times that night. I kept going back. She's actually quoted in my book. I interviewed my mom about it. And what she said was, it's either a body of a Bigfoot or it's just a really well done fake. Probably that's what it was. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't like the one where the guys froze the Chewbacca costume and put it on for sale for $50,000. I mean, this was done by a taxidermist. Yep. Or it was a real thing. So I'm looking at the South Texas State Fair in 83 or 84. It could, the money they spent on this thing, they had to go to multiple places. So if you remember a Bigfoot carcass allegedly being in any kind of fair, carnival, or sideshow in the early to mid 80s, please email me through BigfootSouth.com. I'm looking for more information on that. I would love to track the owner of that down or relatives of that down. That's in the book. But I would like to track the people with that down. If there's any stories, if I can find any origins of that.
Have you spoken to the MNBRT folks up here?
No, I have not.
I can pass along some names to you if you like. And
yeah, that'd be great because I'm just wanting to find more people that might maybe closer to my age and might remember seeing something like that, or there might be a name that pops up I could talk to. So that's kind of a side investigation came out of my book. But I decided to go ahead and put it in there, and thank God for AI, because I was able to create a fairly decent, I remember the thing looking like, in my mind with AI technology and put it in the book. But that was an interesting journey. Another one of those things that fanned the flames from my interest as a kid, I was like, wow, that's pretty cool.
That is really cool. And the fact that, I mean, I bet if you were to see pictures of it, I bet it would not look very far from your memory of it. I mean,
I could print my mind, I can tell you exactly what it looked like. And it was probably a fake, but it's the best fake I've ever seen in terms of anything I've seen on the internet or anything like that of a Bigfoot carcass or whatever. Pictures, it looked really good. And I remember the eyes being very sunk in and they were really round and the face was really round. It was unique looking, but just that's something that I saw as a kid. Like I said, my mom says I went at least five times that night. I'm like, forget the rides. I'm going back to look at the Bigfoot,
But that's incredible. Now, you're a kid, so I don't know if you'd remember this, but do you remember any sort of cooling or anything to try to keep this I don't expect you to, but
there wasn't anything like that. It was in a glass case, so it was either mounted like taxidermy, a body mounted of a Bigfoot, or it was a creation of a taxidermist by other parts or a makeup artist. But it wasn't like that, like I said, that stupid one that was a few years ago. They literally took a Chewbacca costume and froze it. Horrible. I mean, this thing was like, they spent some money on it. If it's a fake, and they spent money and time on it, it was like mounted,
Yeah, well, the fakes are getting even more and more fakey. I haven't seen anything that is even remotely like, oh, that's possibly like that stupid one of the in Colorado where they're on the train and they can see something, and it's just a horrible costume. I'm curious, have you paid any attention to the work that MK Davis is doing in regards to trying to get, try to take that Patterson-Gimlin film and really get absolutely the most out of it to try to define those images?
I hosted MK, as far as I know, his first conference speaking engagement 20 years ago, maybe a second, might have been Texas Bigfoot Conference first. I think we've got out of that film what we can get out of that film, but I will tell you this without any questions. That's real. That right. Patterson-Gimlin creature is real, and it's real. And I have a lot of reasons to believe it's real beyond the film, personal reasons, but I'll give you this much. If it's a fake, how come we hadn't had 1,000 better ones since 1967?
Totally. And we're talking with MK, and someday I'm going to get him back on here. One thing that he talks about is that, that's what we see. That film that we see is just a slice of that trip. There's so much more that happened that isn't in the film that we've seen.
So that's where my interest in it, I'm like, I just want to analyze this on the film without getting what may or may not happened. I'm interested in the actual film part of it. And I think he and others have done great jobs of analyzing that. So I tip my hat to them for bringing things forth in that film that were great. And he's definitely brought a lot out of that film. So kudos to MK on that part of that. But I like to just focus on the film. I think we need to stick to some of this evidence stuff. And what we're seeing, what we have, not what we don't have, you know? And I think, you know, like the stuff that Jimmy Chilcutt, who was a latent fingerprint examiner, did with dermal ridging, that's all kind of like been like forgotten about, you know? I think getting into some of that stuff, and of course the frontier that's probably going to be the most interesting is the DNA part of this stuff.
Absolutely.
And that's kind of beyond my pay grade. I'm going to have to ask smarter people about it. But I think that's something that's on the horizon as well. So there's a lot of people doing a lot of things. And here's, I do want to make a statement here that in this field that we're in, there are many people with diverse opinions of origins, of conspiracies, of kill, no kill, whatever we got it going on. Just do this. This is monster hunting. It's supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
There are more important things in the world than Bigfoot. So if we're wrong on something we put out, don't crucify someone for it. If you don't agree with them, politely tell them privately.
Sure.
Let's try to join this and have fun, and let's unite on the idea. Instead of putting negativity toward whatever, let's put positivity towards saving habitat of wildlife and most likely saving Bigfoot habitat at the same time. Because there are... You know, a lot of people that I disagree with on stuff, but I consider friends in this, because guess what? None of us are Bigfoot experts.
No, no. And I think that's very well said. Got some questions and comments, but we have about a minute left. So I think I can only get to one. I'm going in the order that I received them.
Yep.
Rich asked the question, do you think Bigfoot to be a different species of ape or something else altogether?
Everything that I have seen or heard in my own personal research points toward some kind of primate, ape-like. I don't know, but I'm thinking higher end class A primate type thing. You know, seems to be some of the behavior matches more chimpanzee and orangutan. And I've even vocally howler monkeys, which is interesting. So,
Absolutely. And you know, that's the exciting thing about it is like someday, do you think... Before we go, do you think we're close enough that do you think you're going to see it see one come out publicly within your lifetime?
Very, very. I'm living for a long time, so yes. Think about this: we've had very much soft and now pretty much concrete UFO disclosure.
Yeah.
So if that can be disclosed, how far behind would this be? That's my question. Yep.
Absolutely. Chester, I hope that you come back on sometime because
I'd love to, man.
This was a lot of fun. And once again, folks, the name of the book is called Bigfoot South. Mm-hmm. You go to BigfootSouth.com. You're going to get a signed book. You're going to get a decal. You're going to get a wealth of knowledge and a wealth of investigating on the subject as well. Chester, you know, thank you so very much. I mean, this has been a lot of fun today. I really enjoyed this.
Thanks for having me on, buddy, and thanks for doing a good job of getting people on to talk about interesting stuff. And I hope people enjoyed the night. And contact me at BigfootSouth.com or go check out the Fountain Monster Festival on Facebook and come see me there.
Absolutely. Chester Moore, once again, go to BigfootSouth.com. Tomorrow we're going to be back with Divine Lights and then Refined Divine Wednesday. Everyone, have a great evening, and we'll see you tomorrow.